Back to the very serious issue at hand of how to persuade the vast swathe of South Africans who are not getting vaccinated to get vaccinated. Another really important piece, again on Daily Maverick today, around using behavioural science and understanding cognitive messaging and working from a base of psychological evidence in what you should do to persuade rather than coerce people into getting vaccines. I found it a really interesting read. One of the authors, Professor John Joska, head of clinical services in psychiatry at Krugerskuur and director of UCT's HIV mental health research unit. He did the paper with Dr. Stephen Rabi and associate professor Goodman Sebeko. And I'm delighted to say Professor John Joska joins me now. Prof, very good afternoon to you. Thanks for your time.
Afternoon, Mike. Afternoon, listeners.
Now, I found this really interesting stuff, a core finding that fear doesn't work, that we can't bludgeon people into changing their behavior in this regard.
That's absolutely correct. And I think just stepping back, one of the major challenges of the pandemic is that the virus has been inflicted on us and it has had very significant personal negative impacts. So when we have governments and health departments acting in a somewhat top-down way and telling us to get a vaccine, and in an environment where mistrust has been allowed to develop, people within themselves become more easily polarized and entrenched in their own mindset and positions. And so coercing, as you quite rightly say, is a very difficult way to get them to change their behavior. And taking a vaccine is a series of thoughts and actions, each with its own barriers and facilitators. And if we don't understand each of those along the pathway, we're going to battle to get our vaccination rates above the 40-odd percent where it's plateauing right at the moment.
Now, you began with research with a sample of women in Khayelitsha. And what did you find? What were the barriers? What were their indicators of why they're behaving in the way they are?
So this, in fact, was a very simple survey. We didn't, unfortunately, get into the weeds of specifically what their fears were, but we found surprisingly that for those people who had not yet taken a vaccine, more than 80% of them said that fear of side effects would prevent them from getting it or had been hampering them from getting it, whereas other issues like mistrust in government or insufficient research about the vaccine were really reported far less commonly. And I think an important next step would be, Mike, to actually get into those weeds. What are those fears? What are the barriers? And how can we deal with them in a constructive and proactive way? Giving a simple message and educating the public is just not going to be enough. It's not showing to be enough at the moment.
And it can't be dismissive, and it can't be blunt, is what you're saying. There's much more cognitive science involved in how you communicate effectively.
We're going to have to get alongside people because we're all in a state of persecution at the moment, if you like. We're waiting for the next set of restrictions, the next set of stresses, the next set of economic woes. And what we need is to hear a positive message that helps us to move forward. So we have to understand where people are at, and we have to get alongside them, and we have to enable them. And that is the only way forward. And there's a good deal of evidence across a range of targeted health behaviors for motivational interviewing. So we would suggest that this is an interesting way forward.
Now, what would you do? You talk about, in your article, reframing. Let's be tangible about that. How do I take fear of side effects and not just say, no, there are none, there's no problem? How do I make that a more positive message?
Yeah, so the cornerstone is for the provider or the interventionist or the healthcare staff member to really understand where that person is stuck, what their understanding of the side effect is, and not to confront them with necessarily blunt alternatives, but to suggest that there are positive outcomes that are available to them, to offer them analogies from their own life that will enable them to understand and contextualize that side effect. It doesn't reside outside of their experience. It becomes part of their experience and something they can begin to understand and get through.
But how can we do that on a broad scale, John? I mean, I can see that individually, yes, if I can have a one-on-one conversation with somebody. But how does a government do that when they need to communicate with millions?
That's a huge question. And obviously, if it was a simple answer, we'd be doing it right away. But I would suggest two things. One is that the health department may consider that if this approach is something they want to pursue, they would need to get a bit more information about where those barriers lie. And they could begin to tweak their messaging in a way that was more positive and less coercive. That would be the first level. And the second, I would say, would be to try and find a way to mobilize community health workers, healthcare providers, and possibly even peers, people like you and me, to become deliverers of this kind of messaging. So, yeah, it's a massive mobilization of community and society resources, but we have to do something.
I like the paragraph you had around saying what we have to do for people is create two worlds, and the world is one world without a vaccination and one world with a vaccination, and that's almost the framework you need to move in.
That's right. So it's, again, using language and using the experience of the person who is receiving the message to understand for them what it means to lead these two different worlds. And the world we lead right now that is unvaccinated is terrifying. It's restricted. It's we can't move about. We can't get alcohol. We can't go overseas. We can't see our family. We can't have weddings, etc. So a different world is where we're able to do all of those things and engage more in society and get back to normal.
Just on a slightly more academic level, I've never encountered this MI you talked about, motivational interviewing. Just briefly, in layman's terms, what is that concept?
So motivational interviewing really was developed through the work of Stephen Rolnick and Bill Miller in the 80s to address another scourge of society, which is problematic substance abuse. And really, at its heart, people are ambivalent. They hold two minds about whether to change difficult behaviors. In this case, the target behavior is vaccination. And the cornerstones are really about an empathic, non-judgmental, non-resistive approach to the provider. So being able to engage the person where they're at and to enable that ambivalence to tip over into the positive change of behavior rather than to remain stuck in a negative state of mind and a negative set of behaviors.
Really interesting subject about which we could talk much more at another time.
4 hours.
Yeah, for many hours. And you've raised some really interesting questions for me, and I'm very grateful for your time. That's Professor John Josker, head of the Psychiatry Service at Kruiterskuur, also at UCT's HIV Mental Health Research Unit. His piece was with Stephen Robey and Associate Professor Goodman Sebeko. It's worth a read on Daily Maverick around behavioral economics, if you like, behavioral interventions, thinking about how you persuade people to do things they don't want to do. And for me, the interesting thing about that piece is this is not just vaccines. This is all kinds of behavior. He referred there, John, to drug addiction, changing behavior there, but anything, antisocial behavior of any kind, destructive political behavior. Anything. You're not going to pound people with fear and negativity. You've got to go in with an understanding of what their reasons are and work with the tide, work with those reasons, somehow reframing things a bit more positively.